Welcome back to another episode of WVU Marketing Communications Today. Coming to you live from the campus of West Virginia University. This is a syndicated show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practices with the man who seems to understand all of it, Matthew Cummings. Hey, Matthew.
Hey, Paul. Do any of us really understand all of it? Well, it changes every day.
It sure does. And that's why we got to keep tuning into this show, because just when I think I got it, you throw me a curb.
Yeah, it's changed already since we started talking.
You know, it is amazing, though, because marketing, I'm an older guy, so I'm in my 60s here. I remember when marketing was really more the arts and crafts department. It was the creative people. Now right. It seems to be that plus this new data analyst research scientist component here. How did those, seems like left brain and right brain have to combine in some weird way.
Yeah, no doubt. And we have a special one today, a unique topic. We're going to explore marketing communications and issue advocacy and how to leverage stakeholders on important public policy issues. Our guest today is Chad Clevenger, CEO of One Click Politics. Chaz serves as the product visionary, revenue driver, and strategic leader of the company, and has consulted on more than 100 international, federal, state, and local campaigns for candidates, corporations, associations, and nonprofit groups. Chaz he also attended Civitas Institute of Practical Politics, North Carolina Institute of Political Leadership, and the Campaign Management Colleges. Chaz is a member of the American Association of Political Consultants, Grassroots Professional Network, and the Public Affairs Council. A North Carolina native, Chaz is a Phi Beta Kappa initiate and a distinguished honors graduate of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, where he double majored in ancient history and political theory. Great combination. He also has a hidden talent, and maybe we'll explore this a little bit later on in the program if we have time, and that is singing old school R&B songs. Thanks for taking the time to join us today, Chaz.
Thank you, Matthew. I'm very happy to be on the show.
I want to start out, you know, in my introduction, I mentioned today's topic, and especially leveraging stakeholders on public policy issues. So I want to start there. Who should we consider to be an organization or company's stakeholders? How do you define those?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think different companies have different perspectives on this, but it could be most likely your employees to start with, because mm-hmm. most companies are most comfortable and have the most interest in keeping their employees happy for a variety of reasons. Beyond employees, that can include investors, board members, vendors, suppliers, and then, of course, consumers. And, you know, consumers are who marketing professionals and also public policy professionals like myself have to keep happy when we're doing issue advocacy campaigns, because consumers are, of course, the lifeblood of any company.
Absolutely. So why should marketing communications professionals, though, care about involving customers and employees of their company in these public policy campaigns?
Sure. Well, it's very important oftentimes to be able to engage with people that are closest to your cause or your initiative. And so when a company is facing a challenge in the legislative or regulatory space, take a look at mobile sports betting, you know, right now. That's an issue that is going on all around the country, and states are having to decide how they want to handle that, whether they wanted to, you know, allow people to be able to, engage, in betting from their mobile phones. And, you know, so that's a relatively, you know, new thing. That wasn't a topic of discussion 5 or 10 years ago, but companies who are trying to make a product or are trying to penetrate into that market, you know, need to be able to, you know, leverage their employees of their company and their customers to be able to send messages to elected officials, you know, on that issue, you know, if they want to be able to continue to remain in existence. And a lot of companies in the sharing economy have to do this, you know, as well. Airbnb, you know, Uber, Turo, you know, if you just take a look at, you know, a lot of the companies that their very lifeblood and existence depend on whether or not, you know, they're able to operate within the confines of the law, you know, and able to avoid punitive regulatory and legislative measures that would cost them hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue, it becomes very clear in those cases that every possible stakeholder, including customers, employees, need to be leveraged in those types of situations. And so, for broader companies outside of that, it's important because leveraging people on public policy issues is not only an opportunity to save your company money in terms of avoiding laws or regulations that can cost you money, but also as a way to keep the people who matter most to your company engaged in what's important and what matters to you.
So earlier you mentioned employees, investors, board members, consumers can all be stakeholders, but are all of those appropriate to market a public policy issue to?
That's an excellent question, Matthew, and that varies from company to company. I work with a lot of different corporations, from your traditional blue chip Fortune 500s on down to more disruptive startups, and I think the answer to that question varies from situation to situation. I think most organizations I work with are comfortable leveraging their employees and perhaps their investors or board members as kind of the first tier of people who are most appropriate. And then from there, occasionally they may want to reach out to vendors and suppliers next. The consumers are really the thing that are most scary to a company because those are the people who their interests may not be aligned with the policy interests, of the company. Without, naming names, there are several large, retail, companies that I've done work with in the past. And, their stance on minimum wage laws, for instance, don't always align with the views their consumers may have on those same issues. Whereas, a company like Airbnb, a lot of their consumers probably do have at least an alignment on the policy issues Airbnb would care most about because, for their consumers, they're no longer going to be able to use the service and no longer be able to take advantage of, home sharing, unless laws and regulations that are in the favor of Airbnb are able to be passed. And so there's consumer alignment in that case, whereas, in the case of the retail companies, they may have to be more careful and leveraging consumers that have differing policy views so as not to alienate them and cause them to lose out in the marketplace because of that. And so choosing the stakeholders you want to engage is a very sensitive issue and probably one of the biggest questions that I get asked a lot.
So really, if you think about this in the context of marketing communications planning, and when we work with students, obviously we talk about segmenting your target audience. It sounds like even within these specific groups, employees, for example, or even consumers, depending on the nature of their relationship with the brand or with the organization, you need to do so in a way that's relevant and sensitive to what they need, right? I mean, that's in terms of prioritization and also how you message them?
Oh, absolutely, unquestionably. And, this perspective comes, to me from my experience in the campaign world. I was a political operative for a long time before I got into the government relations, and public affairs, marketing and technology space. Now, audience segmentation is incredibly relative and, it goes to the issue of storytelling. If you want to reach an audience, with effective messaging, whether it's trying to push them toward buying a product or sending an email to their elected officials or making a donation or signing up for coupons for your company, you want to be able to speak to them in an authentic, way. Email marketing tools really revolutionized the way the marketing is conducted 10, 12 years ago when things like Constant Contact and MailChimp started first coming out, followed by Marketo and HubSpot and Pardot and lots of other marketing automation, platforms. And, I think that the good news about services like that is that, it allows you to do some really cool things in the way that you're able to separate, your audiences. And the same thing when it comes to marketing policy campaigns. We want to be able to talk to people about the issues that matter to them. So for a campaign that I was doing for a large dialysis organization, last year, we wanted to be able to segment between people, who were healthcare professionals, patients, and family members at a very basic level. We had a lot of other designations. Just to speak to those three very briefly, People who are patients, the ones who are suffering from chronic kidney disease or, from some other ailment, the way that we wanted to speak to them and engage them was different than the way we might want to talk to their family members. So the way we may want to, to message healthcare professionals who are providing those very critical, services, to protect and to, to help people who are, suffering from a particular, disease. And then, we may segment further, based on education level, veteran status, gender, political affiliation, income level, many other designations that, matter and ultimately are effective and, in driving meaningful action.
So I want to ask you, though, we've talked about this and it sounds complex. It sounds powerful and necessary. What are some of the challenges that you feel are inherent in involving stakeholders in these public policy related marketing campaigns?
Well, sure. One of the biggest challenges is reverse engineering, what your goal is. And in any public policy campaign, the goal is typically always to defeat or to help pass legislation or regulatory measures that are going to be beneficial to your company. And in choosing who is going to be best able to, to help you do that, that can be a difficult thing. Sometimes, large companies, have a bunch of employees like clustered in a single state. So I can think of several corporations where, they had employees in a single state to, make a very large and, very big impact in that one state. But they really didn't have locations around the rest of the country. And so when it came to dealing with federal issues, even though this was a, a Fortune 500 company, they needed to reach beyond their employees and, customers and existing stakeholders and try to find new ones. And they weren't really sure who those new people were. And so we had to, help develop what we refer to as an ideal advocate profile, similar to, ideal customer profile. And this, except in our case, we weren't, trying to convert people into consumers necessarily as much as we were trying to convert them into advocates for this particular company's cause, or initiative. So I'd say one of the largest challenges inherent in involving stakeholders is making sure that you have enough stakeholders to make an impact. Because sometimes you will, and then in those cases where you do, you're lucky, because then the decision just comes down to how do you leverage the existing stakeholders you have to make the most impact? So on a grassroots level, as we say in the political world, you may want to engage your typical rank and file employees to make a phone call or send an email or a social post or record a video that they send to an elected official. But you may want to engage other types of stakeholders like your board members, investors, C-level executives, and actually doing live meetings with elected officials, either, up in Washington, D.C., or, in-district meetings with their congressmen or their senators, back in, in their home state, or personal phone calls, to those elected officials, directly to, make a case for why, a particular law would be detrimental, not to just that company, but to the industry. And so by tying in, your issue to a broader range of themes that, affect a particular congressman or elected official's district can also be incredibly important. And thinking about your stakeholders, if you're part of any coalition or, trade group. So for some of the companies that I've worked with, they have a trade group that they're a member of. They're competing organizations are often part of that trade group as well. And so if the issue is something that is affecting all banks or is affecting, all large consumer retail shops, in a particular industry, then working through that association, as a, potential additional, stakeholder can often be highly impactful in public policy campaigns. But, you also don't want to create too much pressure, too much noise sometimes on sensitive issues, because some issues lend themselves to, making as much noise as possible. So on issues like cannabis or on sports betting, the sharing economy in general, those are issues that a lot of people know about, a lot of people care about, and, there aren't as many encumbrances to engaging a wide audience. But if you're dealing, with a, very, complex issue related to insurance or financial services or, healthcare, where, most people wouldn't understand, much less care about that issue unless they're in that, industry or, very a highly specialized level of training that they may have received about that issue, you know, it can often pay off to, you know, take more of a soft approach, you know, in which case, you know, many companies that I work with, they don't want to create a groundswell of momentum from their employees or from other types of stakeholders, but they do want to make sure that, you know, their investors, board members, C-level executives, and are having those direct back channel conversations with lawmakers, you know, either face to face or, you know, through the efforts of a direct lobbyist. There's a lot of different aspects that, you know, create challenges with involving stakeholders, but those are a few of them.
Thank you, Chaz. We're going to pause right there. I'm going to take a quick break now. We're going to come back and talk more about risk, also alignment and execution. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
And just a quick reminder that today's program is brought to you by West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program. First of its kind, first graduate program in the country, focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University prepares you for your career by learning how innovative tactics combined with innovative ideas, brought to you by award-winning innovative faculty. All that and more you can find out at dmc.wvu.edu. That stands for the Data Marketing Communications Program at West Virginia University. Well, I find this fascinating here, and I have to interrupt and ask one quick question. Can I do that?
You may.
I produced a show for a couple of years here in Orange County with the Association of California Cities, a group of 34 cities that is sort of like a think tank. And through them, we met the water boards and the planning commissioners and mayors in the county here. Mm-hmm. And I was surprised how many of them came in. In fact, one of the water boards specifically told me, so what do you do to tell this story? I never hear about all the good work you're doing. They said, we try and keep it as quiet as possible. We just try and fly under the radar and do our work and hope that, you know, as long as the water comes on, nobody pays much attention. I said, that just seems like old school thinking. When a crisis erupts, then they come with pitchforks to kick you out because you haven't engaged your stakeholders. I'd love to hear what your guest says about that. Is that still the norm? Does local government hope that everybody just stays away and we can do our job? Or are they getting the message they've got to engage their community of stakeholders?
That's a fantastic question. And I would say that, you know, definitely there is a number of people that still maintain that school of, you know, thought. It is somewhat generational, I would say. You know, oftentimes when, you know, I'm meeting with people, if they are advanced in years and perhaps used to doing things like, you know, a certain way when it comes to running public policy campaigns, they tend to gravitate more towards the school of thought that, you know, you just identified, where they prefer operating behind the scenes, doing things, you know, quietly, working through direct lobbyists, you know, working through back channels, you know, through, you know, high-level influencers or grass-top supporters make an impact. And, you know, there certainly remains a huge, you know, market for that. There certainly, you know, remains a huge amount of opportunity in terms of leveraging, you know, your grass-top supporters and, you know, direct lobbyists to make an impact. But, you know, I'm seeing that particularly with, you know, younger organizations and companies and, you know, younger people who are kind of midway through their career, there's more of an appetite to, you know, make noise and, you know, to make impact, because politics has become more of a profession and, you know, more of a, you know, an industry where, you know, making your voice loud and heard is more of the new norm. More CEOs are speaking out about public policy issues. Dick's Sporting Goods CEO came out and said that they were no longer going to be selling, you know, guns in their store, you know, a year or two ago. And, you know, Delta Airlines CEO, you know, came out and said that they were revoking privileges for rewards points on their airline for particular gun groups. So, you know, a lot of, you know, momentum out there and a lot of precedent for CEOs to be more involved in the public policy arena and, you know, to take a position. And in the past, that was something that was unheard of, making, you know, noise in the arena space. The classic model from 10, 20 years ago is hire a direct lobbying firm, let them work the back channels in Washington or in Sacramento or Raleigh or wherever the state capital is, and then, you know, just hope that they do a good job. And while that's still impactful, being able to market your message to your stakeholders and develop new stakeholders from within the community that you're trying to impact is incredibly useful. And so oftentimes when I'm helping, you know, an organization, we will determine who people are in a particular community that are interested in that issue, who we can market our message to and galvanize in order to take action on an issue, because companies are starting to realize that, you know, you can't just be quiet. Squeaky wheel gets the oil. And, you know, if you aren't making noise on your issue, then, you know, legislators are going to pay attention to the organizations that are.
Chaz, we've explored a lot of the benefits here so far, but I want to talk about the risks. I know there are a number of risks that are associated with engaging one stakeholder on policy issues. Can you share a few of those?
Sure. So when it comes to risks related to engaging stakeholders, I mean, I think the number one risk that organizations are always telling me they're concerned about is whether those stakeholders are going to stay on message. A marketing person, you always want to, you know, first of all, make sure that, you know, you have tested the appropriate message. You know, you've done a focus group or survey research and, you know, you've identified what that message is that resonates, you know, with your audience. And then once you've gone through all that hard work to figure out what that message is going to resonate, making sure that your stakeholders stay on that message is probably the biggest risk, and why oftentimes companies are hesitant to want to go out and allow a larger group of stakeholders beyond their employees or maybe their investors and board members to be engaged. Because with a small audience like that, it's fairly easy to send out a company-wide email telling employees what they need to say or not say on a phone call or an email if they want to participate. Kind of same thing with board members or investors. But start leveraging your consumers, or if you start leveraging stakeholders out in the community, not necessarily directly involved with your company, but may just be a supporter of you on that issue, then, you know, there's always the risk that that individual, you know, may not communicate the message that you want them to, you know, in the exact way that you would like. So there's a lot of work that, you know, my company does around trying to control that, messaging. So when that type of work is done digitally, it's much easier because, you know, controlling the messaging that, you know, goes out from a large number of stakeholders, very easy to only allow people to send, pre-approved, messages online through social media or through email or other communications, channels. But, you open that up to non-digital channels, so, it becomes more difficult to control. So the biggest risk, I would say, is staying on message. Risks beyond that, includes potentially putting yourself, in a situation where, as with that organization that your colleague mentioned, you create so much noise on an issue that, you end up, having the opposite effect that you were hoping to have. Because ultimately the goal of any good grassroots, marketing campaign when it comes to public policy is to create enough momentum on the issue to give the perception in the mind of a legislator that there is organic sentiment around an issue that a large number of their constituents share. Mm-hmm. Once you've achieved that and, you've created enough doubt in the mind of an elected official to make them either want to abstain on a vote or, make them, perhaps want to vote your way to table an issue in committee or vote against it or for it, on the House or the Senate floor, then you've achieved your objective. But you're creating so much noise that you either can't control the message or you're putting in doubt in the minds of the legislators whether these messages are organic, then it can tend to backfire. And, sure. One of the issues when, digital marketing became a big thing in campaigns, about a decade ago was the term astroturfing. Much of that goes on anymore, but, that was the big scarlet letter politics that every organization was trying to avoid. They did not want to be viewed as a company that was sending in a bunch of fake messages or creating fake momentum around a particular issue. Beyond the risk of staying on message, giving off the perception of the message authenticity as being organic is probably the other big risk, is that you don't want to be perceived as just creating a groundswell that may be viewed in the mind of a legislator as insincere or unauthentic. If you do that, then they may think, oh, well, these hundreds of messages that I've been getting, half of them, may just be hogwash. And that's the last thing you want.
That's excellent advice. Unfortunately, we are up against our time limit for today. This is It's been a fantastic conversation. Great advice, great insights here, Chaz. I really appreciate you spending time with us here today. And I also want to thank you for listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today from all of us here at West Virginia University. I hope you found today's episode as informative as I have, and we will be live next week. I will be hosting next week live from Integrate 2019 down in Morgantown, so we hope you're able to join us for that special episode as well as we talk about the future of public relations. Until next time, take care.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a bi-weekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice, only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.